work some steps and like figure this out before I go to my partner in that, instead of rushing in and doing it and then telling my sponsor about it later. That does not make me sponsorable. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not bringing anybody into it. I'm just running the show and then telling my sponsor about it later, whether it worked out great or whether I made an epic fail. You know.
I think that covers it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, tradition 8, just the short form. Alcoholics Anonymous shall remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers.
We don't take a professional or a therapeutic stance on our relationship. We don't have to have some idealized vision of what a quote-unquote healthy relationship looks like. As Kathy said earlier, there's probably, you could bring in an outside professional coming to our house and be like, holy cow, how is this working? You guys are insane. And I'm sure that's true. Places where we get fixed ideas.
We covered a little bit of this.
About our relationship. Self-help books, shrinks, counselors, psychics, astrologers, family members, movie, television, internet, daytime talk shows. We all have these ideas. I don't know about you guys. Prior to getting into AA, kind of coming to believe that this simple spiritual kit of tools was actually what I needed, which I did not believe for the first 3 years I was in AA. I read more self-help books. You know, someone is staring at you in personal growth. Sorry, I couldn't resist it. Inside joke. And then my sponsor said, oh, yeah, John, of course you did. It's the alcoholics. It's the untreated alcoholics that keep that business, that whole industry floating. You know?
And here's something that's not going to make me very popular with some in the room. And this is just my personal experience and personal opinion. Take it for what you will. I do not go to Al-Anon to figure out how to manage my relationships. I used to have a lot of friends that were in Al-Anon, and actually in my sickest part of AA. And my social network were women that I really love and respect that primarily were in Al-Anon or were in AA and Al-Anon, but mostly Al-Anon. They have steps. They work a mirror opposite to what we do. So they talk a lot about self-care. That will kill me. It will kill me because I promise you, I'm always taking care of me. I do not need people telling me all the time about you need to keep the focus on you and take care of you. That will kill me. You know, my experience has been I just adhere to what we do in AA and quite frankly, just seek to have a better relationship with God, squash the ego and do more 12-step work. I can show up as a better wife and a better mother. Not because I am working on being a better mother. You know, I mean, it's about getting rid of self. Forget me. The more that I forget me, the better me I am. You know, because it is my natural inclination to turn the focus back on me, back on how I feel, taking my emotional pulse every 5 seconds. You know, I need to set that aside and just show up and serve. And then I am hit by the notion that I'm really happy and comfortable. And then it's gone in like 2 seconds. Because now I put the focus back on me. You know what I mean? It's really about forget me, forget me, forget me. I'll get taken care of just fine. So.
Yeah, and on the Al-Anon question, and I don't want, no one needs to get the wrong impression, because Kathy and I love Al-Anon. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of friends in Al-Anon. And we, you know, like at the Atlanta Roundup where we involve Al-Anon, we love having that kind of stuff. Family recovery is something we obviously believe in. But we've also both had the experience individually or with sponsees that if you're really truly an alcoholic and you have a 12-step program in Alcoholics Anonymous, there are some who have really bona fide qualifiers to be in Al-Anon. You know, everyone here knows Polly Pistol and has heard her talk, you know, and heard her story where she had a couple of alcoholic children who were driving her crazy, and she probably would have ended up drinking. That's a pretty realistic qualifier for Al-Anon. The problem that I have is if my only qualifier for Al-Anon is that I'm an AA member and so I'm around a lot of alcoholics,
right.
You know, I think that's a different deal. And I don't, if that's anybody's experience in here and that's working for you, 100% in support of that, great. I've just had a bunch of sponsees who, like, I need to go to Al-Anon because I'm in AA and I have all these AA, I have these alcoholic friends now, so I need to go to Al-Anon so I can.
Or just because they're married to somebody in recovery.
Or I'm married to somebody in recovery. Fine and dandy. But what I've seen often happen is that person now has two 12-step programs that they're not working. And
right.
You know, and rather than take my AA program to the next level it needs to be, where I'm a servant and I'm sponsoring guys and I'm doing service, because that's like Kathy was just saying, when I am at my best is when I am out of me and I'm not thinking about me and, you know, whether or not my emotional balance is right and whether or not I'm treating everybody in my life exactly the way that's a give and take and it's balanced and it's even. I don't need to be concerned with those things. It's like when Kathy relapsed, my sponsor said to me, John, how many guys are you sponsoring? And I said, about 3 or 4. And he goes, I want it to be 6 by the end of the month so you can get the hell out of Kathy's way and let God sort her out if he's going to. Because God's going to sort her out or he ain't going to sort her out. I had a bunch of people, well-meaning people, people who I love, say, John, you need to start coming to Al-Anon now.
Because they only knew when I got sober.
Right.
Right? Because that's the only time anybody found out, is I'm sober day one and I tell everybody what I've been doing. So I'm now sober trying this thing again. And people said everything from John needs to go to Al-Anon to he needs to write up a contract that's very rock solid and I need to sign it.
Right.
That says what will happen if I, you know, oh, and he needs to take over the finances, maybe put spyware on the computer so I can no longer order drugs over the internet, all this kind of stuff.
I got a lot of really great advice.
Thank God he didn't take it. The last thing he needed to do was work his way into being an Al-Anon.
Yeah.
And try, by micromanaging.
I'm not going to manage her. And that's what my sponsor basically said. John, you get out of the way and you let God take care of her or not. You know, if she's willing to be taken care of, she will be. And thank God she was. You know, but I'm not going to micromanage some other alcoholic.
Right.
Okay? And I needed to get out of her way and out of God's way and do what God wants me to do anyway, which is help drunks. You know, which is what I did. You know, and it's.
And that does not mean that there's not a place sometimes for outside help. Sometimes that's necessary. Mm-hmm. I've often made that suggestion to the people I sponsor who are not involved with someone else in recovery because they may have communication problems. Maybe they need that outside person to be able to hash some things out, work on some stuff. We use outside help with our son that we mentioned because what are we going to do with this child? And it was a family therapy type deal, and we're trying to get some ideas on how to help him. I don't know how effective it was really for him. I think it helped us some, you know, but that was a long time ago. And again, I mean, in general, it was about trying to love him and stay out of the way and know that we're not his higher power. He's going to have to come to the table with this. He's going to have to mature and grow. And that's basically what's happened. I wanted to go to that therapist to fix him. Give me the tools to fix him, to make him how I want him to be. And I did not find that there.
Easy.
Right. Easy. Yeah. Easy, compliant, so we could stop having these meetings entitled, what are we going to do about Parker? At school, everywhere. And the truth is, just like the therapy in my own life, I never found power there. I found some knowledge, but knowledge is not power. And the same thing happened with us ultimately with the therapy with my son. So we got some knowledge and tried some different things that were kind of cool. But ultimately, it was really in God's hands, ultimately. And it's like, God, give me whatever I need to deal with this life on life's terms with a difficult child that I want to strangle every day. And God has proceeded to do just that. So take a break.
Yeah, we'll take a break. Come back to the last four traditions in the Q&A.
All right, guys. We're on tradition 9. There we go. The short form. AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. And then part of the long form, all such representatives are to be guided in the spirit of service. For true leaders in AA are but trusted and experienced servants of the whole. They derive no real authority from their titles. They do not govern. Universal respect is the key to their usefulness.
So we need the least possible organization in our household, which is not to say there's none, okay? But we don't need to micromanage everything, especially the other person's jobs. When we started out, I was in charge of all the finances, which I don't understand why that ever happened, because Kathy has a degree in finance, and I do not. Today, at some point when I got busy in grad school, I think she took over the finances, and And as you said, a lot of people said, oh, you need to take charge of the finances now that she's newly sober again. And I was like, hell no, I ain't doing that.
But there's definitely a lot of organization. When you have two people in AA that are super busy, always got commitments running here and there. You got kids that are running here and there. I mean, my life is run by a Google Calendar that is color coordinated for each person. And part of my morning meditation, when we consider our plans for the day, I take a look at my email that Google sent me at 5 a.m. and said, this is what you got on the deal today. I mean, because I have gotten older, I shot my brain out with drugs. I can't remember anything for 5 minutes ago. And so if somebody says to me at a meeting, hey, can you please do this kind of thing, or I need this thing, could you bring it on Saturday? And I go, you better text me. Because as soon as I walk out the door, I've forgotten every single thing you just said. And I have to really put, I mean, if somebody asks me to speak, you know, I have to tell them, okay, I think that's fine. Send me a text. As soon as I'm in front of my calendar, I can make sure that I'm not going to double book myself. So there is some organization. Otherwise, we would miss all commitments, double book ourselves, and just be, you know, the flakes that alcoholics usually are, you know.
And I'm self-centered, you know. Obviously. And I'm only concerned with what is going on in my calendar and my schedule and my life. And I need to have respect for the other, for Kathy and for what she's got going on, and not just be frazzled and like, oh my God, I got so much going on. I got the roundup and I got the international convention and I got the secretary job at the home group and work and I got these things. You say, oh, and you want me to do something too? You know, that's just self-centered crap. You know, respect is the key.
Right.
Everybody's busy. See, I only think I'm busy and everybody else is just hanging out. Right?
It's so hard for me, you know. And I love.
Did I tell you Kathy was out of town?
I love when my sponsees say, I'm just too tired to go to the meeting tonight.
Oh.
Say no, don't use that excuse with me. Right? And here's the thing that Katie had brought up during the break, and it can apply here as it can other places, is that sometimes we've gotten sponsees, and we have two to three sometimes that are all on fifth step time. Fifth step take a long time, often broken up into several meetings of a few hours at a time, mostly on the weekends because people have the time. And so we always have the respect for one another with our time to say, hey, it's fifth step time. I got two or three people going through them or whatever, so I'm going to need you to help out a little bit, looking after Kenzie, making sure everything's good, making sure the house is somewhat quiet so that Kenzie doesn't come in every 5 seconds and interrupt or whatever.
And this kind of goes back to the fifth tradition about, you know, a primary purpose. One of our primary purposes is AA, okay? I mean, each of us individually has to have that, but collectively we have it too. And so if Kathy's been asked to speak at a conference and be out for the weekend, then I need to do whatever is necessary to support her efforts in that department. And that's where, like, the fifth steps come in. I'll let Kathy know, hey, I got two or three guys in the next month that are going to have to do fifth steps. So there's going to be some long stretches on the weekend where I'm unavailable. So, but I have the respect enough to give her that heads up so she knows that that's coming. And then she's 100% behind that. And I'm 100%, when she's doing fifth steps, I'm 100% behind her doing that. And sometimes it's a pain in the ass. It's like, okay, please, I got to get up and I got to take care of the breakfast for the kid and I got to do the lunch and, you know, whatever it is. I got to, Kinsey, our boys are older now, so our daughter who's 11, our special needs daughter, she's the one who needs to be kind of looked after and fed and, you know, and all this kind of stuff. So sometimes I will have to take on a little more, or she will have to take on a little more because of AA commitments. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's also part of the organization. So.
Right. Yeah, well, we already covered that a lot about not keeping score. It's mostly about, you know, having respect for one another. You know, I don't get to just run around doing whatever I want to do and then just throw it on you last minute like, hey, I got this thing on, I'm not coming home. I mean, keep the communication. I mean, everybody likes to be kind of notified and let know about what happens. Sometimes things come up and you have to make changes on the fly and be flexible. But for the most part, just good communication of what's going on, giving you a heads up and kind of, you know, I mean, it's just common sense, I think. But I tell you what, we assume so much. And I love that thing about assuming is making an ass out of you and me. You know, I cannot assume anything. I need to have respect for you know, what's going on here. Right? Okay. All right. So tradition 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. NCAA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. I love this one.
Yeah. So a couple things here. One is our opinions on outside issues are not allowed to break up the marriage. You know, if she likes one sports team and I like another one, you know, that could break up a marriage.
Political leanings?
Political, right. Political party. You know, if she's in one political party and I'm in a different one, that could break up a marriage if we're going to, you know, let it, you know, be get some center stage time. You know, so part of it is not things like that. We agree to disagree and it's fine. You know, we've already talked a little bit about, you know, we don't have to have all the same likes and dislikes and all the same common interests.
And views.
You know, and views on things. Exactly. So
thankfully for John and I, in most cases where it comes to politics, religion, views of AA, we're pretty much right on point together. Thankfully. We've often joked, and it's only a half joke, that if all of a sudden he decided to come home and he was born again religious and now we got to get on board with that, I don't know if the marriage would last. You know where I've come from. So I don't know. Thankfully, on those big issues, we seem to be, you know, walking toe-to-toe. It's not, but I know that you can have very differing views like that and have this be a neutral ground, sort of like when you come into the AA meeting. You leave your politics, hopefully your job, your religion, and whatever at the door. And you come in, you're just an alcoholic. And so you can have discussions about things. But again, sometimes you just have to call it and agree to disagree. Done. You know what I mean?
A much bigger place where this comes in is at the level of gossip. You know?
Right.
I don't go outside of the family and badmouth my wife. You know, oh, let me tell you what that bitch did this week. Yeah.
Especially in AA. Now, there are a lot of couples I know, not so much here, but they'll say, well, my husband has this home group and I have this home group because I need to feel comfortable about sharing about, you know, what's my family and my feelings and thoughts and whatever in the group. And I don't, you know. Well, that implies a real different view of AA than what I got. Because my view of AA is you air out your dirty laundry and your feelings and your stuff with your sponsor and maybe a couple of very close confidants, and you bring your solution to the meeting. I do not talk about my personal problems at my AA group. We have always same home group because we're not involved with the groups where you're sharing about your day and your life and your whatever. You know, that's just not the kind of AA I go to anymore. I used to. And it looked like group talk therapy is what it looked like. And it's seductive because you've dumped about your stressful day and what's going on, and people have shared at you and they give you hugs afterwards. You kind of feel better when you leave. But there's no solution in that. It's like a little band-aid. I feel better temporarily, but I haven't changed, you know. And so I look at it real different. But I know sometimes that there are people, and I haven't really been guilty of this since John and I have been together, since this was presented. But I've watched this a lot, where there are problems in the home, within their relationship, and I'm telling you what, they tell a whole bunch of people, you know? And then, if the two people are involved in the same home group, now the home group's not safe for their partner, because everybody's looking at them sideways. I know what you've been like. You know what I mean? AA needs to be a safe place, you know? So I don't air out my dirty laundry in my AA group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I should be Kathy's biggest champion outside in the world. And she should be mine. You know, because that's the kind of commitment we want to have. That's the kind of partner I want to have. I don't want to run her down. You know, and in a moment of anger, I'm pissed off, you know. Oh, Kathy relapsed. Let me tell you about her relapse and what, you know, how she's let the whole family down or something. You know, is that going to support her sobriety? You know?
And so, believe me, the fact that I picked up a white chip after picking up year 11 and 12 and wasn't sober, was about to pick up year 13, that spread like wildfire in Atlanta AA without him saying anything. Just the fact that I did it, and it's like groups that everybody, you know, I mean, we talk, man. Gossip's a problem. And it goes blah, 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 everywhere, right? I had to feel those eyes on me of everywhere I went for a while. I mean, I was willing to do it because I couldn't just slink off and say, let's move to a different city because I got to get somewhere else because I'm embarrassed. No, you stand up, you squash the ego, pick up a white chip, just take the punches. It's only temporary. You know what I mean? But it wasn't because my husband is yik-yakking behind my back. And the other thing is, because I've always been the person who is in the relationship with one foot and always working on the platonic thing over here, you know, I am absolutely the girl that would cheat really bad. Because I will pick you apart and he's not doing enough for me, he's not respecting me enough, not whatever, and I look for the guy that understands, you know. Because the new guy over there is me, right? And it always feels good. And I have an ego that likes to get away with stuff and live a double life. So I've been taught that I am not able, I just don't do anything that I wouldn't do if my husband wouldn't stand right there. And my sponsor, and, you know, it keeps it kind of in check, right? I need to go out there and be the kind of wife that he would be proud of. I don't go out there and be obsessively flirting with people and, you know, leaving windows cracked open and acting like this. You know, I wouldn't want him doing it. It's disrespectful, you know? So, yep. All right. Tradition 11. Short form. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And part of the long form, our public relations should be guided by the principle of attraction rather than promotion. There is never need to praise ourselves. We feel it better to let our friends recommend us.
So we need to be a power of attraction not just in Alcoholics Anonymous, but in our personal lives. You know, both of us have had sponsees that came to us and asked one or the other of us to sponsor them based on the kind of marriage that we had, that they had been sober for a long time, their relationship life was insane, you know, saying, how are these crackpots doing it? You know? I mean, because you only have to listen to the two of us and share in AA meetings for a little while to realize what crackpots we are, you know. So that's a really important aspect of this thing, a power of attraction. Am I a power of attraction? That's a good question to ask myself. Yeah. Am I a power of attraction? And let me tell you, we're not, I was just going to kind of say this in the last tradition, but, you know, about communicating and not doing things. I'm kind of a traditionalist in some areas of my life. So whenever a friend of mine or a sponsee of mine, if there's a bachelor party, we're going to the strip club because it's hysterical. And, now, I'm not a guy who regularly goes to strip clubs, you know. But I think for a bachelor party, it's appropriate. And of course, and I always tell Kathy, okay, it's, you know, it's John Corey's, you know, I was the best, or the, not the best man, but the, what was it?
Like?
The only man. When John got married this year. And so I organized the bachelor party and I got all his workmates and all of his, you know, bunch of us in the group. We all went to the cheetah. And it was hysterical.
That was an endorsement, by the way.
You know? Yeah, that was an endorsement. I get my 10% from the door. But I'm real upfront with Kathy about that and always have been, you know? And so there's certain things that, like some people would say, oh man, a guy with 27 years sober going to a strip club, that's just, jeez. You know? You know? And maybe it is, but that's sort of the guy that I am. I think, you know, that kind of boisterous insanity is kind of a lot of fun. And so we did that, in full knowledge, you know. So.
One of the things about Dennis and Barbara that I found to be attractive, and really interesting, actually, and not everybody has to, you're autonomous in your relationship. You don't have to do it this way. But they had we touched on it a little bit, a very open home. Now imagine, we lived in London for 4 years, and on one of our trips, like back to the States, we stayed for weeks at a time and go see family and make it count. We'd be in Atlanta area for a while. We were over visiting Dennis and Barbara for the afternoon. While we're just sitting here, you know, shooting shit, whatever, at least two people walked in on different occasions, no knock, no key, walked right in their house, went to start making coffee, and we go, oh, do they, because we knew they had people living there often. Like, they live here? Oh, no, they're just coming by. I mean, it was like always people in and out and wandering around and whatever. You know, and not everybody has to do that, but that's the kind of house we've had. You know, they always said, go to your home and let people see how you live. It is real easy to zip up in an AA recovery suit in the parking lot. And then be, you know, a shining example of AA, and then you go home and you yell at the dog and beat your children. And, you know, I've done it. I know what it's like. So it's, you know, I think it's better to open up your home. We've allowed people to come and live with us, you know, for periods of time. And we have parties and whatever. And just see how we live, really. And hopefully it's an attraction, you know. For some people, it would be straight up insane, you know. But we like it. It's all right. And
yeah, we have an AA home. You know, we really do. There's a lot of activity at our house. There's a lot of sponsees coming over there to meet. There's a lot of people hanging out. We get together. We watch football games. We have parties, and you know, and we like that, you know. Sometimes it's, you know, you want your privacy and you want your alone time and all that. But at the same time, I want an open home. I want an AA home. You know, I want the spirit that goes on here to be infused there.
And that was part of the reason, I suppose, that that unlike some parents who may curse and be crazy and all of a sudden they have this baby and now they got to watch every single thing they say. Man, there is no way with my kids around all the time in the car, at home, or whatever, and the way alcoholics talk. I mean, I want to be able to kick back in my own house, take my shoes off, and be who I am. And I curse like a sailor. I watch it when I go to the grocery store and the kids' school. And that's and from a podium. And that's about it. You know what I mean? And so, you know, I'm free to be me. You know? And I'm not trying to put on airs. And with us having so many alcoholics at the house and on the phone all the time, I mean, I don't even know how that would work, me trying to curb that. I don't even know what that would look like. So, last one. All right. And then we'll have some Q&A. Good. We're doing good on time. All right. Tradition 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. In the long form, and finally, we of Alcoholics Anonymous believe that the principle of anonymity has an immense spiritual significance. It reminds us that we are to place principles before personalities, that we are actually to practice a genuine humility. This to the end that our great blessings may never spoil us, that we shall live forever in thankful contemplation of him who presides over us all.
Right. Both of us had the same misunderstanding of this tradition for a long time. And that misunderstanding is that principles before personalities, meaning I'm putting what I need to do, that was somehow an injunction to me to take my principles and put them above your messed up personality.
Smug superiority.
Yes, smug superiority, exactly. And really, that at all, it is, there are principles that are much, much greater than me, and they need to go way above me and my ego. You know, it's not about putting you anywhere. It's about putting me in my proper place. It's about humility. That's what this tradition is really, really, really all about. It's about humility. People who are genuinely humble, they're also just sort of genuinely happy, attractive people. You just like them. You know, they're so admirable. You meet someone who's really humble, just got that, just whatever, either they've got their own spiritual thing or they're just naturally sort of humble people who aren't big egomaniacs. God, they're attractive. You know, and so it kind of goes with the power of attraction thing. I need to try to be humble and not have all of these needs and worries about how am I going to get taken care of, how am I going to be sorted out, when am I going to get mine, you know, and be more concerned with what's going on around me. How can I be a servant to the people around me?
There is only one ego and one personality that is trying to kill me, and it's mine, right? I must put the spiritual principles, the steps, and the traditions over my own screwed-up personality that is always vying for first position, looking out for me, thinking about how I feel is the most important thing on the planet. That is my problem. And that has to be squashed. And all of the literature supports that, by the way. And so I went to a lot of meetings where that didn't seem to be the theme. You know, it was about I need to put principles above personalities in this home group and, you know, this kind of thing. And it's uh-uh. It's my personality that's the problem. I'm the one who produced confusion rather than harmony. You know, trying to have my own way, concerned with my thoughts, my money, my sex, my feelings, my sleep, my, you know, needing somebody to pick up the slack so I can relax, you know, whatever the deal is.
And the ego is has the ultimate powers of recuperation. You know, the whole thing we do in AA, right, it's about ego reduction. You know, and it works amazingly well. You know, we come in here desperate. The ego is at an all-time low, and we're finally willing to listen to a sponsor and take some suggestions that aren't our own, which is almost impossible for an alcoholic. And we get some results, and wow, I'm sober for 3 weeks, 3 months, 3 years, and I've got a job, and some people actually kind of half respect me, and, you know, and I've got some clothes, and I got a bank account, and I got a girlfriend, and an apartment, and, you know, a driver's license, and a car, and all of those blessings, right, come, and they reinforce my ego. And my ego says, look what I've done. Look how freaking great I'm doing, you know. Matter of fact, doing this kind of thing can be one of the worst ego things that there is in AA. One of the most dangerous things that can happen in AA is to get sober enough to be asked to speak a lot. You know? And the ego can just come right out. Oh, yeah, man. No, they want me to come speak again.
Yeah. The ego has the ability to take those blessings and really cool things and use it to kill me. You know, the ego is resilient, as he said, and Bob likes to say it's like a toilet bowl. You know, you flush it, but it always fills back up again. And it comes out in a new crafty way. And Bob learned from old timers. I mean, Bob Darrell gets asked to speak all around the world. You know, AA pays for him to go to Australia and here and there, and he's gone all the time. And he says that because you get treated like a superstar when you do that, that people get drunk over that. Because you're treated special, not just like some average bozo on the bus anymore. So in order to average that out, because God has given him an amazing ability to transmit the message, people want to hear it. But he has to go once or twice a week when he's in Vegas to the county detox, where nobody knows who he is. They don't know what kind of car he drives. He's just some AA do-gooder coming here that has to be leveled out where he's a big, fat nobody. Because when you get asked to speak and have these blessings in AA, you can think you're somebody, you know.
And, you know, kids, you know, you see a lot of couples in AA, they get married, which they never thought would happen. They have kids, which they never thought would happen, you know. And then the kids and the marriage end up just taking them out of AA. The busyness that comes with that. The blessing ends up basically taking someone out of AA. That happens all the time, too.
Especially with women.
More often with women, that's true.
Because now their primary purpose is not helping the other alcoholic. Their primary purpose is that baby. Right? And it is a purpose of sorts. It's a job. I don't seem to get a lot of spiritual points by doing that which I'm supposed to do anyway. If I'm not showing up at work and I'm calling in sick and I'm not... It's a symptom of the self-centeredness, really. But I can't just hang my hat on, you know, I'm a great person and I'm doing great in AA because I'm showing up for my job. People become workaholics in AA, as if working more, making more money and being able to do that is a treatment for alcoholism. Raising kids, going to a job, going to church, those are not treatments for alcoholism last time I checked. There's nothing wrong with those things and having a nice, full, balanced life and getting all out of life that's on offer. But I have to understand what my primary purpose is. Because if it's my job, it is anything other than AA, if it's my marriage, whatever. And I find this a lot with women. Because either they have a baby and, like, that's going to take their time. Or their husband is not in the program, maybe. And they say, oh, go to AA, get fixed. You're crazy. Just go. And the minute that they start feeling better, okay, great. Now you don't have to go to those meetings as much. You need to come home and be the wife and the mother that you were supposed to have been before. Why do you still have to go to that AA? It takes a lot of wherewithal to really understand that this is the new norm. Sorry about that, but this is how it's got to be. And only, you know, either everybody gets on board with it or usually doesn't. Either somebody goes back out and drinks because they feel guilty, like they need to go and be that their partner. They're afraid the marriage is going to end or something like that. So their personality, their fears driving on them to, again, lose their sobriety. Because I don't believe there's a lot. I don't really believe in complacency here. My experience is you're either moving away from a drink or towards one. It's always a fluid thing, you know. And hopefully, I mean, it's not the spiritual path is not a straight and narrow line. It's quite curvy based on my ego. Woo, you know, I'm going to run around in circles on that one, you know. Hopefully I'm moving in a general forward direction, though, you know. but it's all kind of curvy, and you know, I think I have a better idea. Into the wall, and okay, maybe not, you know. But hopefully, moving forward.
Mm-hmm. And which basically brings us to an end. But I just want to say, none of this is about getting it right. Okay, none of this is about being perfect, because that's not going to happen. Like Kathy was just saying, we're all goofy, you know, crackpots, you know, self-centered, you know, I'm just loaded down with character defects like judgment, dishonesty, manipulation, and those things are going to keep peeking out, self-reliance, you know, and I'm not every day going to get up and really let God be in charge. Some days I'm going to get up and very unconsciously just take the whole damn thing in my hands again, and I'm going to screw it up, you know. So my alcoholic tendencies, whenever I make a mistake and screw something up, is to throw my hands up and say, you see, it's never going to work, which is just more alcoholism right there, you know, because this is not about getting it right or being perfect or anything like that. You know, it's about being on a path, going forward, being a human being, not being a big shot, just being a guy who's trying to just do something very unnatural for him, which is to put spiritual principles into effect in his life. You know, I'm totally unprincipled, 100% unprincipled by nature. You know, so I'm going to get it wrong a lot.
I guess that's it. But we still have about, you know, however long, 15, 20
so
minutes, whatever.
Q&A.
For questions. Just speak up loud.
I'm Michael Harvey, Berkeley Recovery Alcoholics.
Hey, Michael.
Hi, Michael.
Thank you very much. I think I've learned more about y'all, too, in this last few hours, and I've known about y'all the whole time I've known y'all. Dennis was also my sponsor for quite a while. I love Dennis and Barbara. I was Dennis's alarm clock for many years. I had to call him and wake him up at 7:30 every morning for 2 years. The reason I picked Dennis was because I had some anger issues. And so did Dennis, and he helped me with that. Y'all used to go to meetings with me and Gina over at Tucker. I didn't know much about y'all then. I love tradition stuff. Chet Goins and Don Williams taught me a lot about traditions. And one thing that I've learned, that every one of the traditions lines me back up to point me back to tradition one. Mm-hmm. Every one of them. Because our common welfare comes first. Personal recovery depends upon it. And when I practice the genuine humility, that happens. But when I don't, things blow up in my face. And even though I'm sitting here coming up on 29 years in the program, I'm not perfect. And I am an alcoholic. And, you know, in a partnership, it takes two. Practice these traditions. If you got one practicing and another one isn't, well, it's just not going to work either. And, you know, last year about this time, I had some things happen that blew up in my face, and I needed to come somewhere where people didn't really know me and just blend in. And y'all welcomed me with open arms, and I thank you for that. And it's hard to practice a genuine humility sometimes because, like you shared, our ego wants to get it away. And what happens with me, and Jerry Benefield had told me one time about the 12 tradition, is my ego will say, I did this. I got all this. And my blessings do spoil me, and I do stop doing what I'm supposed to do. And every time my nose gets bloody. You know, I got to remember that as an alcoholic, that I stop doing what I need to do. And another thing I heard about the 12th tradition, and Kathy touched on this, also, the only time I want to look down on another human being is when I'm reaching down to help them up. We're all are created equal. We all are just those of in here. And once again, I appreciate y'all, and I've learned a lot about y'all today. This hasn't been an easy way of living, but it sure in hell has been a better way. Thank you.
Thanks, Michael. Rusty?
Rusty?
Hey, Rusty.
Hey, Rusty.
It's good to be here. Thank y'all. I took a lot of notes. You know, when you start to get sober, you come into the fellowship, you know, the first thing people will say is, no relationships for 6 months, 12 months, whatever, you hear that. What's difficult for me, and I think for a lot of people, is if you were in a relationship before that for 5 or 6 years, and alcohol wrecked that, and you find that you want to be back into that relationship, how do you considered a new relationship in a way. Blew together, and it's caused me some conflict, because what do you just say, okay, another relationship for a year when you're really being full of that woman and you're committed to that relationship? How do you reconcile that?
So I'm not someone who lays down a whole lot of hard, fast laws with the men that I sponsor. I will tell people, especially if someone's brand new and all they're doing is trying to chase down some sex or chase down a relationship, then we need to have a conversation about that. But generally speaking, I tell people nothing you do is going to work until you've worked the 12 steps and got a new spiritual angle in your life. So if you really want to have a relationship or do something, then get through that process, get busy sponsoring some people, so at least I'm out of myself enough that there's a little window of grace for the Spirit to enter and do something with me, because I cannot make a relationship work, even this one. So I got to have a new power. I tell the guys that I sponsor, so well, when can I get in a relationship? And I've already told them that I'm not going to fire them if they start dating, but they say, well, when would you think it would be okay? Whatever. I said, well, when you're through the steps and you're sponsoring a guy or two, you made a really good, sometimes the amends, for instance, take a long time because there's certain amends that take longer to do, but when you've really made a good start in those amends and you're in 10, 11, and 12 and you're helping people and you're sponsoring people, and the person you are involved with is doing the same if they're in the rooms. Because if those two things aren't happening, I don't think my chances are very good.
Right. I mean, not everybody can stay out of a relationship for a year. What if you were already married? What if you blew that out of the water and they managed to stay with you somehow? I mean, the patience of the people that we're with, I don't know. Obviously, that's going to have to be restarted on a new basis. And there's a lot of literature in the family afterward and that covers a lot of that. There's several scenarios, general scenarios. I mean, if you have two people that were used to a relationship being really sick, sometimes abusive sick, I mean, crazy, right? Both people have to start living on some sort of spiritual basis. Doesn't mean that they both have to go to a 12-step program, but there's going to have to be some change because the system has been set up like this, right? It's crazy. Now, one person can be committed to AA, work in the steps, work in traditions in your life, get spiritually better, and the other one not. I haven't seen that work out real well because the system's all messed up. The person that's not doing anything spiritually often wants to pull on the person to pull them back into the sickness again. So it does say sometimes marriages don't make it. Sometimes they, change. I don't know. The only hard line I really draw, and it may seem hypocritical to some, is when somebody I'm sponsoring who has some time and goes after a newcomer. Because I feel like it's really detrimental. Like I said, it worked out with John and I, but for every one or two that's worked out, most of them blow up epically. And I started dating somebody who had 6 months sobriety when I had 3.5 years. Within a month or two, he went back out for 8 years. You do not want that on your conscience. It is not fun. We take a lot of stuff light and we joke and we're, within 5 seconds of being around alcoholics, start talking about freaky sex and stuff like that. And we have a good time, right? But this is a deadly serious thing, man. Not everybody makes it, And the tendency is for the person who is new, they make that other person their higher power. And they're not really willing to get on board with what we do here because they don't have to. They feel, they're going for human power. So that's sort of where I kind of draw the line. Aside from that, I mean, I could set some kind of parameter about, I don't know what's magical about day 366 once you have a year. I mean, last time I checked, I was not well at day 366 by any, I was sick yesterday and today I'm well. Let me at them. And I don't know, because I had been in AA for 4 years before, I think that's maybe the only thing I had a little bit of a leg up when John and I got together. And I had a real determination that I didn't want to do that again. So I got busy quick, but in most cases, it just is a disaster. I mean, two flakes make a blizzard. You know what I mean? So
I want to just throw out that the line that I like is out of the Big Book, where it says, you know, if my conduct continues to harm others, I'm quite sure to drink. You know, and if I'm here with some time and I'm playing around with somebody who's basically got none, you know, some brand new person, you know, a lot of times that is, I'm interfering with their chances of making it. And that's conduct that harms others.
Hey, I'm Katie, my apologies.
Hey, Katie.
Yeah, I think that's part of this, too, with you guys, and it's still, it was excellent, and I really appreciate y'all doing this today. I was one, Trey and I met in this home group, and some of y'all know this, but I'm sure a lot of you don't, but I remember, I think I had 8 months, and he had four, and I remember I was still, Kathy was my sponsor, and I came to Kathy, and I was sure that she was going to say, absolutely not, because she's kind of a bitch anyway. And I was sure that she was going to say, there's no fucking way, you're as crazy as they come, you're not dating. And, you know, it's like, whenever I think I know what she's going to say, she was like, she's like, we've known Trey. Trey's a free spirit. I think you should go out with him. And I'm like, oh, really? I mean, she was like, you know, he had played softball with John and she. And we both didn't have, like I said, we didn't even have a year. And she was like, you know, sure, I think you ought to give it a try. You know, something like, you're probably not, it's not like you're marrying him. And you know, we kind of started dating. And soon after, thank God, I did do these traditions with you guys early in our relationship, before we were engaged or after we engaged, but it was early in our home we did it. And you know, but just by being exposed to it over and over and hearing it again today and kind of looking at it, makes you look at yourself and say, this is an area where I am still keeping score, or I do try to, you know, whatever, you know, the character defect is that we're still working.
She's all up in my cabbage patch.
and you know, it's like, I think this home group has spawned five marriages, and they're all pretty good, but it's like every single one of those marriages are still, you know, coming to A, making A the center of their lives, sponsoring other people, having, you know, being sponsorable, sponsoring others, and that sort of thing, or I don't think it would work, you know, and we still have the issues. I remember one of the main things we didn't follow was the, money, you know. Kathy's like, yeah, you got to put it together. I was like, yeah, no, I'm not going to do that. And, you know, I didn't realize that my husband would just start making as much as I did, you know. I liked that idea as long as I was making more. But then when he started making money, I was like, wait a minute, we should have done that, you know. who's paying for this, who's paying for that, or what do we do? But, you know, we get better at it. We talk to our sponsors about it. We work at it. But it's still hard. I mean, our marriage isn't perfect either, you know. And we have to, you know, this was something I wanted to be at today to learn more about how I can, you know, act better and, you know, my own inventory with myself and what's going on. Because, you know, if I'm not, if it's all about self-redemption, you know. And but anyway, I just, I loved hearing all this stuff again today. I got lots of notes, but just wanted to say that we're one of the people that did get married. I think we got married before he even had a year. Or no, like, you had just had a year. I think he had a year. And, you know, we've been married 5 years now, and things are good. I mean, it's way better than anything would have been if I wasn't working, you know, the steps in our marriage and the traditions in our marriage. And it's because...
It's because Trey's been drinking the whole time.
Cocaine maintenance program.
Having you guys in our life has helped a lot, because it's like we can... It is a good example. You know what I mean? And I know that it's not perfect.
Well,
and all that good stuff.
One of the things about that is when I was in college, I dated some people who weren't in AA, and it was fine. And some people would say they never want to, like, dip their pen in the company ink, so to speak. You know? They don't want to date anybody in AA because, you know, the odds are good, but the goods are odd. And so they date people outside of it. That's to each their own. It's totally fine. I've watched both of them work just fine. It's no big deal. In my case, because I always have this general sense that I'm weird and I can be around people who are not in the program, but I never feel as comfortable as I do with people in the program, and I was always been really involved in AA, I like the AA relationships better. You know, I like being open who I am and you know, that kind of thing. Now, saying that, one of the things that was attractive in John, and for me, is the way that he ended his last relationship. You know, his relationship, number one, was not chaotic, was not insane, was not just completely selfish. He obviously was a good AA member. He believed in the steps. He'd had a spiritual awakening. That was really clear. And the girl he was with, it just really wasn't the person he wanted to marry. That's a hard way to break up a relationship when there's not some epic problem. It just wasn't the right person, really. And that's a hard conversation to have, you know. But that was really attractive to me, you know. I mean, I'm used to going after the smoldering, mysterious type in the corner that has a reputation to be the one he's going to be different for, right? And so, you know, if you decide there's somebody you kind of like in AA or whatever, make it more than just a sexual attraction and they're paying you some fucking attention. I mean, check them out. Who's their sponsor? Are they showing up to do service work? Do they really look like AA is the center of their life? I mean, that was the thing. When Katie came to ask me about Trey, I was like, well, let's just see. He's got a good sponsor. He's working the steps. He shares in the meetings. He's running around trying to help people. He's always pitching in. I mean, you know. So later on, when she said, well, he's got a past. and she says, and let's face it, I mean, a leopard doesn't change his spots. I said, you better hope that's not true. I mean, then what are we doing here? If I'm going to do all this stuff and I'm going to basically be the same person who can't change, why am I here? I must change. This is the avenue for changing who you are. My first sponsor said, you got to trust God, clean house, and change everything about yourself. I didn't like that too much. But the good news is that I guess some of the quirky, weird stuff was front and center, and that's fine. And the selfish stuff had to go. That's what had to go. So a better me showed up. So, yeah, there may be a time thing where, ooh, it can go either way or whatever. But as long as people are really committed, you know, and really doing the deal, then you got a better shot than most. I mean, nobody has a crystal ball, could say how it's going to work out. But the problem is most alcoholics, you know, just, you know, we're really bad. We're crazy as hell and we're chaotic and we're like want to invite somebody in just so we can spread the disease everywhere. You know, I mean, you know, that's really the deal. So, you got a question?
I'm Robin. I'm on the
phone. Hey, Robin.
Thank you guys. Better understand what healthy relationships should be like. When I came into AA, I was in a relationship for 7 years in my drug and alcoholism. And I thought when I came into AA, everything was going to be great. Everything was going to be in color because it was so black and white. And that my relationship was going to be just, you know, take off. Everything in my life was just going to, you know, change. And it talks about that in the big book and in the literature, that sometimes the relationships and marriages just don't work out. They don't work out. And that was really hard for me because I always thought, well, you know, if I'd have done this enough, you know, all those kind of crazy things. But as I sit here and went through the traditions, I was everything you're not supposed to be because I didn't know. I did the best I could under the circumstances, but quitting drinking was just not enough. And trying to get sober, we fall down a lot, we get up, I mean, we get knocked down. And like you said, facing life on life's terms is tough. And just, you know, but I just, you know, we do lose jobs. We get divorces, we get married, we have kids, we have kids, we do all these things. But I have to agree that my sobriety has to be first. And I do have to practice these conditions in all areas of my life, just like the principles. No matter what happens, no matter what in my life, you know, we lost a child, you know, and that was tough, you know. And you know, I've seen a lot of things, the death of my parents, the, you know, long relationship breakup, house foreclosed on, you know, I mean, it's just crazy. But I'm not unique. This happens every day right now to somebody else in this world. But I just want to thank you guys because it makes me want to be better. And it makes me want to live up to these high ideals. So maybe next time, I don't know, but maybe next time I can bring a better self in. Instead of, you know, crazy. Thank you.
Thanks, Robin.
I'm Natalie, and I'm
calling. Hi, Natalie.
Thank you very much for sharing your relationship. And, you know, Kathy, especially the struggle with relapse, because, I mean, that is such humility. I know when I had, 9 months, my first, foray at the program, 9 months, picked up dirty chips and naturally, kind of sitting through that and getting that humility is a really great foundation. I know at least it was for me. And I wanted to ask you guys about, my fiance and I, we get along really well. We've never really had a whole lot of, like, big blow-up arguments, but we always joke that I'm in the communication business, but that we're really bad communicators, we don't have a lot of big arguments, but we have, like, we get irritated with each other from now and then, but how do you guys kind of diffuse those, and, you say you don't go to bed angry. What are your best ways, aside from, really cleaning those dishes well or organizing the garage? I'm pretty good about, if it starts to get a little heated, I say, lower your voice, don't talk to me that way. But what have you found are the best ways to really talk things out so that way you're not saying things you don't mean, you're not, taking each other's inventory, you're not, having to turn around and make amends for it later?
I mean, I think, again, coming back to unity, nothing is allowed to threaten the unity. Now, sometimes, quick snap, things do threaten the unity, or at least briefly, because it's like, what the hell are you doing? Occasionally something like that will come up. More often than not, though, it's like maybe a sharp comment or some snappishness or something like that will come up. And it's like, hey, hold on. I don't know what that's all about, but what's going on? Let's talk about what we need to talk about. Again, I don't know if your partner's in the rooms or not, so it might look a little different, but I think spiritual principles, I got to practice them no matter what. When Kathy was saying earlier, it's not 50-50, it's 100-100. Sometimes I'll have a day where I'm disconnected, and the best I got is 20% that day, but she's still trying to do 100, and vice versa. And when that happens, someone's not saying, ha-ha, 20% today, huh? That helps a lot.
Two little quick scenarios. I would say the more often this is a scenario. John comes home from work about 6 o'clock. I have gotten really aggravated with the children because they're not staying on task, doing their homework. They're watching YouTube, and I'm having to go in there constantly and redirect them and redirect them and redirect them, and I'm just getting more and more pissed off, and it's this thing, right? He doesn't know this, so he walks in, and he's bumbling, like this, and he says something to me, and I snap off at him, right? Because he's walked into my aggravation, and I snap, I'm not cursing, it's not awful, but it's bitchy, And he may say, why are you acting so bitchy? I just walked in here. I would say that's happened more often, that sort of scenario, right? My initial reaction is, I'm not bitchy, you fucking asshole. because I immediately want to fight, that's the reaction, right? So he goes upstairs, I'm like, he does anything right here. Just keep doing what I'm doing or whatever. But because it was a flash in the pan, really just doing the next thing, I'm rattling off in my head about how wrong he is and all this kind of stuff, and pulling out, then I start looking at the list, because I didn't even know I was keeping it, but now it starts coming into play. And then I calm down, and I pray, and I breathe, right? And I go upstairs, and I say, I make an amends immediately, promptly, 10th step, now. I'm so sorry I snapped at you. You worked all day and you didn't deserve that. The kids are driving me crazy and you just walked in, I'm sorry about that. How was your day? Done. That is 90-something%. Now, the last argument we've had was in 2014 when I came back from the first trip to L.A. Now, I come back from L.A. It's the first time I've been gone for 2.5 months. The guy is hanging on by his fingernails. I come back, and I am sure that he thinks it's going to be sunshine, roses, unicorns, and rainbows because Kathy is returning. What I return to, number one, I am completely jet-lagged. I have been on California time for a long time. So that's hard for me to even, after spring break this week, I just was worthless all week till I can get back on the nice time zone, right, and getting up at the same hour. Number two, my son gets into a knockdown drag out with a friend at school, ends up choking him around the throat, and is suspended from school for 3 weeks. My dad is diagnosed with melanoma and is dying. He's got 2 months to live, and I know it. Not everybody else knows it, but I know it. And he throws out his back and I have to buy a new mattress. And I mean, it is just months of crap, hell, right? But because he's thinking that it's going to be amazing when he comes back, and it's not so amazing when I return. One day, he gets into an argument with the kids about something he feels passionate about running in the morning with them, doing some physical fitness. And my son, the actor who's been in L.A. with me, who's battling the time zone thing, doesn't want to run. He's like, you know, he's overweight and couldn't give a flying fuck. He is giving John a lot of problems. And he says, forget it, I'm just going out in the morning. So he walks in, I'm in the kitchen trying to like get things together for the morning, because they went to a school that at that time they were going to school at 10 o'clock, so a little bit late. And he's crying to me, and I go, I understand, man, I'd probably be feeling like that too, you know, whatever. So John comes in, and basically because we're not a unified team on this thing that he feels very strongly about, he feels like that my son came to me, and now I'm siding with him, and there's this thing like, well, Dad didn't said no, so I'll go to Mom, you know what I mean, that sort of dynamic. A fight ensues, in which, because I didn't know that this was building in him, you know what I mean? And there never seemed to be a good time to talk about that, about, you know, and it the fight ensued to the point where he said, did you relapse when we were in L.A.? I said, oh, right. He said, because you seem really unhappy and blah, 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 and all this kind of stuff. And that was the one time, again, I broke the rule. And I said, you know what, if you're so unhappy, you can pack your shit and get the fuck out. No, I haven't relapsed. Now, that's a bigger fight. That's a bigger problem. That is absolutely sponsorship material right there. So he goes off to work. I'm like, oh my God, I am just stewing. And before I know what my sponsor's going to say before I even call her. Write an inventory. So you might as well just do that first. So I scratch it out. There's nothing like writing inventory when you're mad. I mean, it comes out in a second. You know what I mean? And then you're looking at your blame and trying to come up with those. That's a little more prayerful. And then I call my sponsor. And I start trying to put myself in his place. I start seeing some of that stuff before I even talk to him. You know what I mean? So by the time he comes home and I've gone over this inventory, this 10th step with my sponsor, I'm ready to talk. And I said, obviously we got to talk. Because I don't know what that was this morning, but, you know, that's not good. Because that's not what we do. And so we had a chance to talk. And because I really believe in my personal experience, the more that I look at inventory and really try to put myself in the other person's shoes, really try to think about and really experience what would it be like to be the person that had done to them what had been done to me, kind of thing. Like, and really try to get that dynamic. Amends go so much better when I really try to put myself in their shoes. And so we ended up having a talk, and we did not have to go to bed angry. You know? And that was a bigger thing that, you know, had to be taught. But I'm not having to spend a lot of time writing inventories about my spouse.
Right,
you know?
Which, by the way, I left the house that day just furious. On the way to work, was on the phone with my sponsor, you know, saying, he said I needed to do some things, call him back in the afternoon on the way home, back home to the house, you know, and we had a conversation, and we straightened things out, and whatever, and...
Yeah.
So every once in a while, there's nothing short of a blow up that's going to sort it out.
Well, and part of the process with amends is how can I make this right for you? And one of the things he asked of me was, you know, this thing with working out with the kids in the morning is very important to me. I really hope that you will be on my side instead of playing both sides and allowing the kids to go, well, Dad's mean, he says no, so I'll go to Mom because she'll be like this, or vice versa. We need to be a unified team, right? Because there's a lot of things. Kids can really play that game, really manipulative, right? The thing with alcoholics, we never grow out of that. I mean, that's natural for kids to do that, right? And so I said, no matter what, he's not going to come crying to me anymore. It's important to your dad. It's important for your health anyway. Do it. I don't want to hear anything else about it. And that was all he really wanted, you know? Not too hard to do, you know? It didn't matter if... I put myself in Zach's shoes and said, God, if I was 15 years old, I'd been like, screw you, I ain't getting up, whatever. I mean, you know, I may understand where he's coming from, but it was more important that we are unified and not let Zach get away with that just because he thinks Mom's going to take my side. You know what I mean? It's more important that we stay unified. So that was that. You had a question over here?
I was just going to
I believe that's kind of a hard example of how complicated I just made that shit.
Well, one of the things, because I do sponsor people who are married to or with people that are not in the program, and it's real easy if you're involved with a home group like this to be like, oh, I work all day and then I come home for like 5 seconds and I got to go to the meeting, or I don't come home at all because I meet people for dinner and then I go to the meeting and I come home and there's nothing left for your partner, right? It'd be real easy to do that. And balance is that place that alcoholics pass through very quickly as they're going from one extreme to the other. Woo, there it was. Woo, there it is. You know, this kind of thing. In the beginning, and we haven't done this for a while, but I mean, it probably should, is having a date night. You know, it's very important, even if they're both people in the program, about, you know, if our date night was Friday night because there's no home group meeting and whatever, turn off the phone, let everybody know. You know, you can 911 me or whatever, and if I get a chance, I'll do it. But you know, otherwise you're just checking in, because I believe this is my nemesis right here. I cannot stand even being with a friend or whatever out to dinner and they're constantly like this on the phone. Put the damn thing away. Be present. Be present for people, right? And so it's about finding time to be there for that person. But hopefully you're with a partner that totally understands that the age stuff comes first. It's always been that way, even with our kids. If my kid's birthday falls on a Thursday or Saturday, I'm at the home group. If our 20th wedding anniversary fell on a Saturday night, we're at the home group. Right? And now if my son was in a performance that was on a Thursday, I might have to miss it. I went to Prince the other night. I ain't gonna miss that for the home group. Sorry, you know. But I don't make a habit out of that. You know, so we celebrate our anniversary on a Friday or a Sunday. Close to the date. I mean, what's the big deal with the date?
We've been married 20 years, doesn't matter.
I mean, but same thing with the kids. You know what I mean? It's like, there have been performances or some certain things that have to be attended to. They're once-in-a-lifetime things. Fine. You know, feed whichever dog is barking. You know? I don't have to be at AA all the time, go to every single home group meeting, every single thing we do, to the detriment of my family. My friend Bob Darrell lost a marriage because he did that. Because he was working 60, 70 hours a week, would then do all his AA stuff, and there was no time left for his marriage and his child, and she walked into somebody else's arms. In fact, one of his sponsee's arms.
Who he continued to sponsor?
Who later on he continued to sponsor and tried to keep their marriage together. Miracles, miracles.
Guys, we've reached the end of our time. I want to thank y'all for your patience and tolerance and love you.
Make a nice loving circle and say the Lord's Prayer.
Yes.
And then help us clean up.